And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your co-host, Ryan Burns, and this is your breakdown edition. As we previewed last week, we have a couple of NDSU wins to talk about, including a playoff win over San Diego. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, from what you've told me here this morning, it sounds like there's a little bit of a weather event going on outside your window.
Yeah, it's mighty... mighty windy outside. Depend on who you ask, it, I guess, is just how much precipitation there's supposed to be. Shouldn't affect the weekend plans, though. Might affect UND's travel a little bit up for the basketball game, but certainly a blizzard warning. So if you're hanging out at home or whatever, we're glad to give you 45 to 50 minutes of Bison audio goodness.
Yeah, absolutely, Wire. So let's get into the football news to start, and that's we have to start with some injury news, some surprise injury news that came out on Saturday. What can you tell us on the latest on the injury front, Ross?
Yeah, it sounds to me like Darius Shepherd had a hamstring injury. I talked to a source of mine within the program. It actually occurred in practice. It wasn't anything that was left over from the game against South Dakota or anything really prior to that. It's just something that tightened up in practice. They weren't really clear with us on whether or not he would be able to go against the Jackrabbits, but I mean, I think the coaching staff had a pretty good idea of how this game against San Diego was going to go. PGT with that knee also didn't play, but he seemed to be moving around fine. I just think that all in all, this had a lot to do with who the Bison were playing and maybe not the severity of the injuries.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the rest of the playoff picture from last weekend. We have to start with the opponent for NDSU, and that's going to be South Dakota State. They advance, as does Youngstown State. So it looks like the Missouri Valley, shocker, is having some more teams go deep into the playoff.
Yeah, and the Big Sky, shocker, is 1-3. I think that both of these things represent something that we've been talking about kind of all year. The Missouri Valley being a very impressive conference. Really, the Illinois State team that lost to Central Arkansas kind of blew that game in the fourth quarter. I think it'd be very possible for this squad to have, or for this league to have, four teams still in. But impressive work certainly still from the teams that are still playing. It's unfortunate because of regionalization that two of them have to play in the quarters and don't get a shot in the semis or, you know, even further on down the line. But that's where we're at. So obviously very impressive for the Valley to have three of the final eight teams. No question about that.
And you already mentioned North Dakota once on this show. Let's mention them twice, and especially in just such of a good light that we're going to mention them in. The Big Sky Conference doesn't have a great showing, and that includes a North Dakota team that I believe, Ross, correct me if I'm wrong, they have this number 7 overall seed here in the playoffs, and they fell at home last week. How shocked are you on a scale of probably 1 to 10?
I mean, I'm pretty surprised at the way that they lost the game. They were 2.5-point underdogs going in. We both felt like they should have been seated behind South Dakota State. It would have avoided what has to go on now, which is two of the probably best three teams in the country playing each other in the quarters. So yeah, that's really my beef about it, but I'm not certainly sad about the University of North Dakota blowing a 24-7 lead in the third quarter. That does not make me sad. That actually brings joy into my life. So it kind of is what it is. That if you were paying attention to strength of schedule, you knew that they were kind of a paper tiger and that kind of thing could happen. And in fact, that whole lower part of the bracket has really been turned completely upside down, and it just is unfortunate that the Bison were given the number one seed, but given the top half of the bracket with most of the talent in it.
Yeah, shocker. I'll just leave it at that. I think Ross has put enough words into the Fighting Hawks that need to be said on this show. But finally, in our news part of the segment here, the lack of intro videos. I know that this is something you want to talk about. It sounds like the sites, in terms of where the games are being played, want to be as neutral as possible. So that's why you may have not seen an intro video this weekend. What are your thoughts on that, Ross?
Well, it sounds like something that has maybe been a part of the rules, I guess, just from talking with someone within the program. It's something that South Dakota State didn't do last week, that North Dakota State is not going to be allowed to do this upcoming week. And it really is a sore subject for Bison fans just because of how special the intro video is to the university. Many have, you know, described it as the best intro in the FCS and one of the best in college football. There aren't a lot of, honestly, college football venues that you can get to go, you know, dark like that, where it has that basketball arena feel to it. And it's just a really cool experience. It's something, you know, I've been down there a number of weeks in a row with some of the kids that are being recruited just down on the field. And, you know, mom and dad, the kids themselves, all taking out their videos to take iPhone recordings of the intros and how wild the place gets. So it's not a huge deal. In fact, most coaching staffs elect not to even bring their teams out onto the field until the intros are over. But it's just a fun thing for the fans, and to take that away is kind of typical NCAA, I guess, as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's a pretty good way of putting it. So let's switch over and talk some Bison basketball here. And we first have to start, Ross, with a double-digit road victory. I don't know that that's something we can say that's happened often here in the last couple of seasons, but NDSU wins 85-67 over North Carolina A&T, and a big reason for that is some good play from the big. So what did you see from this 18-point road victory?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you that these guys aren't very good, to be honest with you.
Hey, we will take every road win we can get, considering, what are they, 1-2 this season? I believe they're 4-11 on the road last season.
Should be 2-2. That High Point game was at High Point. I know it was part of a tournament, but that was a true road game. So they have two road victories. I think the High Point one definitely more impressive. A&T, as we mentioned kind of in the run-up to the show, they got pretty blitzed by Carolina Greensboro, who was a team that beat NDSU but probably isn't as good as NDSU, and that game was close. And this game was pretty lopsided from the beginning, but very impressive work from Dexter Werner, 16-12, which is his best game of the season. He was very, very difficult to guard for the A&T bigs. No question about that. So it's good to see that from Big Dex after a couple of games where he was just kind of outmatched from a size perspective against Mo State and certainly against Xavier.
And Kai Cabellas also had a pretty good game, 4 of 11 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3, 15 total points. It's nice to see him start to fill the stat sheet again in terms of the point total once again, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, he's kind of getting there. I'd like to see the turnovers down a little bit, maybe the assists up a little bit, but he really is turning into a heck of a player and a guy that they can go to offensively. I think, you know, next year certainly you're going to be talking about Cabellas as one of the better guards in the conference. We haven't really seen him in conference play, obviously, but there just aren't a lot of 6'5 kids that can run the point in the Summit League. There's no question about that. And what Kai has been doing all season long, as far as I'm concerned, is very impressive and certainly promising for his future and the future of the program. But just to see him do what he did against Missouri State and then back it up with an okay performance against Xavier and then this against Carolina A&T, I think it really shows you that Kai is certainly part of the offense and not just a facilitator, which is going to open things up eventually for Paul and Jacobson as well.
There's a couple of bench guys I want to touch on from that performance, one being Tyson Ward, 28 minutes for the true freshman, 15 total points on 6 of 9 shooting. He didn't actually record another statistical measure in terms of an assist or a rebound. He did have three fouls, but it seems to be pretty clear that when Tyson Warren's on the floor, don't expect much elsewhere right now and just expect some scoring. Are you surprised by, number one, 28 minutes for Tyson Ward and also 15 total points?
I'm not, just because of his length and the way that Coach Richmond likes to use players like that. I mean, he can play the two, the three, and in a pinch, the four, so you can have Ward out there with a bunch of different lineup combinations. It appears that he's grasped the playbook relatively quickly. Coaching staff certainly is willing to lean on him for large stretches of the game, but he's going to be a heck of a player. I mentioned after that game against Xavier that Dang Gu and Tyson Ward seemed to be really the two guys that were athletic enough to be on the floor with Xavier. They're not the two best players on the team, certainly. Probably won't be the two players that are leaned on in March, but Ward's a hell of a player, and I understand very well why the staff has elected to pull that red shirt and are just going to use him, I think, as really the sixth man.
I mean, another one of the big reasons why NDSU was able to have a double-digit road victory is because of their stats on the offensive rebounding side of things. 20-0 boards. I don't think that's something we can say has happened very often, and it just doesn't happen very often in college basketball. But 20-0 boards, Ross, that's a lot of second-chance points. It's a lot of opportunities to try and clean up what you missed.
Yeah, and that was really, I think, probably the backbreaker for A&T. They're a reasonably big team and should not have had that kind of a struggle on the glass, against that North Dakota State team that, I mean, we've talked about it. They're short. They're not as long as you probably would like them to be, and certainly not as long as they're recruiting to be in the future. And this was a game where A&T just got absolutely destroyed on the glass, and that's something that, to be honest with you, it just can't happen. If you're a team as big as A&T and you're expecting to compete against North Dakota State, if you're expecting to beat North Dakota State, you have to beat them on the boards, because that's one of the places that they lack.
The final thing I really want to touch on in this game is Dang Gu. Obviously, he has the showcase against Xavier, and then he goes into this game, only plays 7 minutes. It's not like there was foul trouble at all. He only had one foul. But what do you make of the decision from Coach Richmond to only play Dang 7 minutes?
A lot of the times there, it's just a game flow thing for Coach Richmond. You mentioned that Ward was in there, 28 minutes. Those two guys are probably at this point viewed as pretty interchangeable, I would say. Dang, not exactly a post player in this offense, though he has, exhibited some pretty great post moves. Not a guy, I think, that's going to bang very much in the post. So they're both just long wings, and Richmond went with Ward, wanted to get a road W. He's always kind of had a short hook with freshmen, and so I don't know if anything happened, really. But it's just kind of one of those things. I will tell you this much. I would not read very much into it.
Fair enough. All right, let's get into this meaningful game tomorrow night. Bison versus the Fighting Hawks of North Dakota. Last time these two teams played, Ross, Kai Cabellis came off the bench to put on a show and help the Bison get the victory. 18 points off the bench, 6 of 7 shooting, 4 of 5 from 3 in that 69-67 comeback victory. It was a heck of a game last year, and I'm expecting that's going to be the same thing we see tomorrow night. What say you?
We'll talk about it in the predictions, but I don't agree. Not this particular game. There's another game with North Dakota next Friday that I think will maybe look a lot like that. But, yeah, it was a tightly contested game. That's a terrible, terrible place, Grand Forks. And the Bison just struggle up there. That, I always talk about that 2013-2014 team with Taylor Braun that beat Oklahoma in the tournament, went up and lost to a very, very average UND team by 16. I mean, they just got trashed. And you know, that Bison team is one of the best 35 basketball teams in the country by the end of the season. And it's just something about that place. And honestly, it's just something about true road games. They're hard to win. There's just no question about it. And this is not a true road game. This is at home in the Shield Center.
So I'm guessing if you're not thinking it's going to be like last year, you're thinking it's going to be like 2014, the last time that UND came into Fargo, when it was a 71-42 victory, 29 points for the Bison in terms of that margin of victory. Is that, I'm guessing, a place where you feel more comfortable then?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to say, is it going to be closer to a two-point win or is it going to be closer to a 29-point win, I'd probably tell you two. But I think most of the games, to be honest with you, that have been held in Fargo, this was really, honestly, the men's basketball rivalry was really the first step sort of in getting these two schools to play against each other. I know, you know, the golf teams went to the same tournaments and the baseball teams played and things like that. But as far as the high attendance, high revenue sports, men's basketball was really what sort of got this thing kicked back into gear. And those first couple games that were in Fargo were pretty destructive for UND. I mean, they were not really competitive. Even some bad Bison teams really put up some numbers against UND. So until North Dakota proves that they can come into Fargo and compete, I think that would be something to wager on.
So, and again, another one of the reasons why Ross isn't very high on this UND squad, as you look at their schedule, Ross, you brought it up to me, 3 non-Division I wins, a couple of suspect losses. It's just they haven't played anyone, and North Dakota State has. You know, there's a little bit of discrepancy there, and I think that just the Bison basketball team is better than UND right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way that Coach Richmond schedules every year, and it's to have iron sharp and iron. I mean, this Bison team took on Missouri State, which is a high-end Valley team, a team I expect to do really big things. I actually think if they get on a run, you might see them as that third at large out of the Valley. Playing, obviously, Xavier, that I think is an Elite Eight type of program. These guys have played some really good basketball teams, and they got blown out by Xavier and played pretty bad against Missouri State, but you're at least going to learn things, you know, from those games. You're going to have guys emerge and develop confidence like what would happen with Dane Gu. Yes, the Bison played Concordia and Minnesota Morris and Waldorf, but they also played real games. UND opened up the season with, you know, 3 non-Division I games and then lost to Wright State and lost to North Florida and then were able to get past Cal State Bakersfield by 2. I just don't know what from that you would see as at all intimidating, especially for a UND club that's supposed to come out of potentially the Big Sky. I've seen, you know, Lenardi and a couple of other prognosticators pick them as league champs. So it must be the Big Sky must be weak. Look at that.
Shocker. So if North Dakota State is going to win this game, they have to guard Quentin Hooker. That is the name to know for tomorrow night, folks. He was a mid-major All-American last season. He's averaging 18.5 points this season. He's shooting 55% from three. He's 19 of 34. So you're going to have to get a hand up behind the arc, Ross. But game plan for Coach Richmond, I'm just going to do it for him. Guard Quentin Hooker.
Yeah, I mean, Hooker is really their only shot, and he's kind of their only shot in every game. You talk about this stuff with the football team at NDSU and you know, not getting individual awards because the team is so strong. I don't know, you know, whether or not Quentin Hooker's better than Paul Miller, but I know that the players around him can't really provide any offense. And if Paul Miller was asked to shoot it as many times as Quentin Hooker was, you might see Quentin Hooker type numbers, but this guy is UND basketball at this time. They've got Seals and Crandall and a couple of other guards that they like to use, but just nobody that you can really count on for a bucket. And I would expect, speaking of Miller, he has actually been covering the opposing team's best player this whole season. Without Corey Brown obviously having graduated, and because they've decided to play Carlin Dupree in the starting lineup, they're sending Miller out on the opposing team's best wing generally. So you're going to see, I think, a little bit of Cabellas on Hooker, and you're going to see a little bit of Miller on Hooker, and they're gonna make him work for it, because if NDSU is doing one thing well this season, it is guarding. There's no question about that. They are a very good three-point shooting team that is shooting three-pointers very badly. That is going to average itself out. If you look at all you have to do is look at career shooting percentages for Miller and for Cabellas to understand that this thing is going to turn around. I think from a three-point shooting perspective, Tyson Ward starting to settle in. I know he started probably 0 for 6 from 3. This team's going to get better from distance, and I think what has been able to prop them up and have them be able to have a 6-3 record at this juncture in the season is the defense, and that's something I would count on extending into the game on Wednesday for sure.
You talk about Paul Miller, you know, consistently guarding the best player. Do you think that has something to do with his offensive woes here in the last couple of games? Again, the last game here against North Carolina A&T, 7 points, but he did have 8 boards and 4 assists, so doing a little bit of everything. So, I mean, is that something you want to attribute to him expending a lot of energy on defense and not having a lot left on the offensive side of the floor? Because if this NDSU team is going to make a run, they need a lot of Paul Miller. They need a lot of it on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think any wing in the country is going to be tired after running around after Alize Johnson and J.P. McCura. There's no question about it. I don't know if that's the best use of Miller, but they don't really have a wing stopper necessarily on the roster at this time, at least not one that they would trust to free up a Miller, one that they would play over Jacobson or Dupree. So Miller's going to have to be that guy, and that's maybe an adjustment that he's going to have to make. And I shouldn't say tired, because all these NDSU athletes are exceptionally conditioned, especially the ones that study under Jason Miller and Jim.
Well, yeah, but it's more of, if you're spending that much energy on defense to be a defensive stopper, it's hard to say that you're going to have a lot left on the offensive side of the end if you're spending that much time consistently trying to put up your best effort on defense, right?
No question. And I think, too, where you see him pitching in other places is kind of what ended up happening with Corey Brown's entire career. He would always have these balanced, stat lines, but with not a whole lot coming on the offensive end. Now, I think we're dealing with a pretty small sample size, and in a competitive game for, 35 minutes of play, you might see Miller, have a 27-point outburst. You might see it happen on Wednesday, to be honest with you. UND plays a three-guard lineup, and really none of them play a whole lot of defense or at least can guard a guy like Miller. So I think, yes, it is taking up energy on the defensive end, but it's what the team kind of needs to win. And you've seen Cabellas certainly pick up more of the scoring load because of that. But I really do think we're dealing with more of a small sample size thing than something that's going to last all season, and that we should pay attention to what happens kind of over the long haul.
Finally, before we get into our prediction here for your thoughts on this game tomorrow night, Dengu, again, 7 minutes against in NDSU's last game. I'd have to imagine he's going to be a heck of a matchup problem for the Fighting Hawks. I'm guessing somewhere between 14 and 18 minutes at least, Ross, but what would you think?
Yeah, you would hope that he gets, two real runs, one in each half. He's just such a matchup problem because we're getting back to real honest-to-goodness mid-major basketball, and UND is very mid-major in that. They have a 7-foot post that doesn't really play, but then most of the guys that actually play are 6'8", but they're 6'8 posts in the sense of like Dylan Miller and Spencer Eliason, and not to badmouth them at all, but they're not athletes, they're posts. And obviously, as we saw in Xavier, Deng is an athlete. So I would anticipate big things from Gu, just from a matchup perspective, as I don't really believe that the University of North Dakota has anybody on their squad that's athletic enough to mess with Mr. Goo.
All right, so let's get into this prediction. What do you think this game's going to shake out to be?
If I had to give a score prediction, and I'll put that in the weekly hoops check-in. I'm going to head up real shortly here to speak with Coach Richmond. He's got an 11 o'clock media availability here, and I would say 70 to 56 would be right in the range that I anticipate this one going, just because I think UND is really weak in the sense that they haven't played anybody. And that's really hard when you go into, you know, up a level of competition. And I think they really are. Just the squads that they've faced are not as good as NDSU. And this is going to be, hopefully, a pretty rabid crowd at the Shield Center. Ryan, what have you got in football and men's basketball recruiting?
Not a whole lot on men's basketball, but again, I've seen some people on the Bison Report asking for Jake Springer updates. Jake was the official visitor from this past weekend. It's been three calls into Jake Springer, one Sunday night, two last night. No response there, but he is willing to text. So that tells you all about what you need to know about today's youth in society here as a 24-year-old talking about teenagers. But it's been slow and steady with Mr. Springer. You know, he enjoyed his visit. And he's actually told me he's looking to potentially make a decision here in the next couple of weeks. And if he is looking to do so, I would imagine that would be North Dakota State's guy to get. A couple of other official visits to note are a couple of the commits have told me they started to schedule their official visits. Tanner Sunt will be coming in the third weekend of January, and Nash Jensen, the offensive line commit, will be coming on the second weekend of January. So that's when you're looking to see in these final 3 weeks up till signing day. I'd imagine all the top targets that NDSU really wants to get on campus will be on campus then. So those are the dates to look forward to. But again, I'm really working on trying to get Jake Springer to answer his phone. And if he does, I can get an article up on the Bison Report. But that's the big official visitor to note from last weekend. So let's get into this San Diego game review. Ross, 45-7, Bison victory at home. And Easton Stick has to lead the way for you, doesn't he?
Yeah, the best I've ever seen him play. And I've seen a lot of Easton Stick. I think he's now played 20 games. The Bison are 19-1 in those games, which is a little absurd to win 95% of really anything that you do, especially college football games against other kids on scholarship. But I digress.
Quick question, Ross. So we talked about the 23-point margin for NDSU in the playoffs against non-Missouri Valley opponents. So what is it at now, like 28, 29?
No, just because I think the sample size is so big. You're talking about they won a home game in 2010. They won three home games in 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, and now they have won a home game in 16. So the sample size is a little bit too big. Obviously, those weren't all non-conference, but the sample size is a little bit too big for one game to swing at 5 points up. I'll do the math, and we'll maybe give an update on the South Dakota State preview, even though that is a conference game.
Right.
We'll have to take a look at that. But getting back to Easton, I just think this was his best game. Running the ball, he was electric as always, but throwing the ball, I thought he was almost perfect. You talk about kind of more advanced statistics really than just completion percentage, and his adjusted completion percentage for drops, I think was probably 75%. And then if you talk about aimed passes, as far as taking out all his throwaways, it was probably even higher than that. I think he was pretty exceptional on his aimed passes, the ones that he was actually throwing to a receiver, as far as what got dropped and what got dropped and what was actually a bad throw. He was exceptional all game long, and I really think where he's at his most dangerous is on those run pass options that go to the right and his strong side. And that's something that is really difficult to defend, because he can tuck it and get you 12, or he can throw it deep. the throws to Moorlach were right on the money, and then that stop and go from the 10-yard line. That's a tough route to run in the red zone, and Stickeners and Dowski really played it perfectly. And there are a few throws in a lot of games where you'll say, you know, Easton's trusting his arm or taking a risk there, maybe not throwing the ball away as well as you would want him to. And there are a couple instances that I know it sounds dumb, but where you'd like him to whip it out of bounds and he sort of throws it in the dirt, but someone could have maybe almost got it. Nothing like that today. I mean, this was all very solid decision-making, and he made every throw you could ask for. He made vertical throws, made the short throws for first downs, was good on the deep out from the far hash. That's a dangerous throw. He was perfect with it. He got a big play to RJ. I just thought from a snap-to-snap basis, running the ball, throwing the ball, I haven't ever seen Easton play better than he did against San Diego.
And when you look at the running game, 299 rushing yards against the air quote number one FCS defense in terms of a couple of different measures there. And some of the yards per carry averages that you brought up in the pre-production meeting, Ross, were just absurd. Four carries for 99 yards for Easton Six, so a 24.8 yards per carry there. Lance Dunn was over 10. Bruce Anderson was over 15. A lot of big plays from this Bison offense.
Yeah, and I really could see why San Diego was the number one defense in the country. They were really, really scheme sound. They were almost never out of position. They just weren't big enough, and that's something that we'll kind of finish on as well. I mean, they just didn't have the athletes, not offering scholarships, but they were a good team, and I know that sort of sounds dumb because it was 21-0 at halftime, and it was 45-7 at the end of the game. But I've seen teams that just shouldn't even be there before. And I don't really think this was one of those teams. Even though it was 45-7, I was pretty impressed with the San Diego program and specifically the defense. The Bison were just too good. And they've been too good in the offensive line for a number of games in a row. I think where I was really impressed with San Diego was on third down. The Bison struggled a little bit to convert third downs in this game. But they still scored 45 points, so you have to be impressed with that. But, yeah, Easton Stick with 24-plus yards of carry, Lance Dunn with 10-plus yards of carry, and Bruce Anderson with 15-plus yards of carry. The running game is finding those explosive gains that they've been looking for all season long.
I'd be curious for your thoughts on Jonah Hodges on the other side of the ball for San Diego on offense. He was the Pioneer Football League Player of the Year, a transfer from California. He rushed the ball 19 times for 93 yards, and he also caught 7 passes for 68 yards. What do you think of the reigning player of the year in that league?
Not at all surprised that he was the player of the year. He was very, very good. You can tell that he has long speed. Seemed like he really enjoyed bouncing it outside. And there were a few times, honestly, when the Bison were maybe not quite sound enough in what they were doing defensively to not allow him to bounce it outside. So Hodges was really an impressive player. I have no problem at all saying that he, honestly, or the quarterback could make it in the Valley. I think they could both start for a lot of Valley teams, and I was very impressed with both players, but specifically Hodges. I really thought that he was good and that the Bison did a good job corralling him because that's a talented kid.
Obviously, only 7 points allowed against this defense. Another defensive dominating performance. MJ Stump on the second drive of the game with that 40-yard pick six. This defense, shocker, comes to play at home once again.
Yeah, that's kind of been exactly how NDSU's gotten through these playoff runs, is with exceptional defense at home. And they played exceptional defense at home again. I thought played extremely well and were very sound and was very impressed with them. You know, being without Tangway, Pierre Tucker, and Nick DeLuca, obviously, that's a lot of star power. Those are all conference level players. And the guys that stepped in for them played really well. I want to specifically mention Dom Davis. He was spectacular all game long, and it was a kid that you and I were talking about early on in the season that needed to get on the field. I didn't really love or understand the need to play the big nickel with Eric Bachmeyer because of all the nice things that we heard about Dom Davis as a scout team player a season ago while he was redshirting it. Boy, is he a player. I think, with his length, he has the ability to play on the outside. But right now, I think he's one of the better nickelbacks probably in the Valley. And that's something to be very excited about if you're a Bison fan, because they're going to have to play a lot of 5DB stuff against South Dakota State and potentially in a national championship matchup with Eastern Washington.
Another guy I want to get your opinion on, I already brought him up just moments ago here, but that's MJ Stumpf. He made a game-high 9 tackles, 8 solo stops, and he had that pick 6 on the second drive of the game. I know he's playing well, but is it ludicrous for me to ask you, is he a potential All-American?
Well, that's the tough part. I really think he's an All-American. I made a little bit of a case for it in the film review. I think, that you see the play that he made against Iowa, the play that he made here against San Diego, and just how good he's been all season, not stepping in for DeLuca at Mike linebacker, but really holding the defense together from the will spot. That's a very important position in the way that North Dakota State plays defense. Will, I would say, is right up there as 1A and 1B with Mike, and he's done a exceptional job all season long. The problem with All-Americans is you're going to get guys like Christian Roseboom from South Dakota State. You're going to get guys that are on weaker defenses that have to make a billion tackles every game, and those are going to be your All-Americans. It's not that often that guys that are from more balanced teams and put together slightly lower seasons but with high levels of play are recognized in the manner of being an All-American. So I'm not convinced that Stumpf is going to be an All-American, but I am convinced that he deserves it.
And again, we talked about it in the preview. Just the San Diego team, non-scholarship, just not big enough to really compete with the big hosses on both sides of the line for NDSU, and it eventually turns into 45-7. Again, I'm guessing this doesn't shock you in the least bit.
No, it doesn't. We said it all going into the game. I picked 40-10. They just weren't big enough. I got in from the tailgate area, went down the steps onto the field, took one lap around the north end zone there, and it was obvious these guys weren't big enough. I mean, they just, with the exception of that 6'9" left tackle, that was really something to see. Him go against Greg Menard for 4 quarters was pretty wild, but they weren't big enough, and the kids that were big enough weren't athletic enough. They were kind of fat, really, more than they were big. And that was a problem that Jacksonville State ran into last year as well. I just think that these guys weren't quite athletic enough, and that's something that they're going to run into, not being able to offer scholarships. But I would not be at all surprised to see San Diego back in the playoffs the next couple of years because of that quarterback.
I know we're not supposed to talk about it until Thursday or Friday when we record, Ross, as we wind things down for this breakdown, but South Dakota State, North Dakota State, part 2, I'm pretty sure it's safe to say it's on.
It's on. It's so on. I don't know if it's ever been as on as it is. This is the only team that beat North Dakota State this season. This is South Dakota State. This is Christian Roseboom, who twisted Bruce Anderson's ankle under the pile. This is everything that Bison fans have been waiting for, and then you take their intro away from them. So these are going to be just 20,000 of the angriest upper Midwesterners. Don't get that angry, but these are going to be particularly angry upper Midwesterners. And it is. It's just on. And I could not be more excited for a game than I am for this Saturday's, because it is going to be absolutely electric. I would expect, 2012 Georgia Southern levels of noise. I really do mean that. It's going to be on.
If you don't have your ticket for tomorrow night's game against North Dakota and you don't have your ticket for Saturday's tilt, I really don't know what you're doing as an NDSU athletic fan, because the atmosphere for those two games is going to be absolutely electric. So that's going to do things for this breakdown edition and for both the Bison basketball and the Bison football teams. We will be back later this week to hopefully break down a NDSU basketball victory and preview this South Dakota State game. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening once again, and go Bison.
And UND.